highlighting the topics that affect agriculture nationwide. It's the AgNet Weekly with Sabrina Halverson, brought to you by AgNet Media. And now, here's this week's featured conversation.
The Environmental Protection Agency announced its final rule to designate the two most common PFAS chemicals as hazardous materials under the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, or CERCLA. And while these chemicals are not used on farms, this could have a big financial effect on many farms around the nation. To get more understanding and information, we're talking with Courtney Briggs, Senior Director of Government Affairs at the American Farm Bureau Federation. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Let's get into this week's AgNet Weekly. Could you start out by just explaining to our listeners what this rule is?
Sure. So this rule is part of the Environmental Protection Agency's regulatory roadmap on dealing with PFAS. And just to be clear, so your listeners understand, PFAS is a chemical. We call them forever chemicals because they do not break down naturally in the environment. And they are used in everyday products. Anything that is waterproof, stain-proof, grease-proof. It is in Teflon pans. It's in your Gore-Tex jackets. It is in a variety of everyday products. And the concern has been over the last several decades that exposure to PFAS is leading to some negative health outcomes. So the federal government is now taking steps to regulate PFAS chemicals and their uses. And this was really the first step on EPA's regulatory roadmap, and it is to designate PFOA and PFOS, which are the two most commonly used PFAS chemicals. PFAS chemicals are a class of chemicals. There are hundreds of them, but PFOA and PFOS are the two most commonly used ones. And the federal government is now regulating those chemicals as hazardous materials under CERCLA. And I'm sure a number of your listeners have heard of the CERCLA law, but it is essentially the Superfund law, and it assigns liability to those who produce and use these chemicals. And obviously, I want to be very clear at the onset that farmers do not produce or use PFAS chemicals anywhere in their operations. But what we're seeing happen is because these chemicals do not break down naturally in the environment, and the chemical bonds of these chemicals are so tightly woven that they are finding their way to water supplies, and they are naturally finding their way to farm fields. However, I should caveat that with one of the areas where we are seeing PFAS chemicals end up on farm fields is through the use of biosolids. A farmer will go to their local water utility and take that sewage sludge that is nutrient dense and land apply it as fertilizer. And this has been a celebrated activity by all levels of government. For farmers to do this. It's permitted. Unfortunately, there are areas of the country where we are seeing biosolids contributing to PFAS levels on farm fields.
So I want to make the point again that you made and very clearly made too. And it's just so important that people understand this. I think that this is not a chemical caused by farming or chemicals, I should say, a group of chemicals caused by farming or used in farming. And yet, this new rule could have an effect on farmers, right?
Absolutely. So it is worth repeating a number of times. Farmers do not use these chemicals. Nowhere in our operations do we use PFAS chemicals. They are just naturally, you know, finding its way through the environment to farm fields in certain areas of the country. Now, this rulemaking, the CERCLA law, is a joint and several liability statute. So that means that anyone who comes into contact with the chemical can be held liable. So certainly, you know, the chemical manufacturers, you know, the 3Ms and the Chemours of the world are the producers. Then you have Gore-Tex and others that are the users of the chemicals. And then you have us. And we are called passive receivers. Once again, we don't use it. It passively comes to us. And unfortunately, under this rulemaking, just the way that the law is written, anyone who comes into contact, whether it's intentional or not, can be held liable. And that is why we are so concerned about this rule.
What happens if it is found on a farmer's land?
Yeah, so at this point, I should have started this conversation with saying that the federal government is building this plane as they're flying it. So there are a lot of components that they just have not figured out yet. There is technology that still needs to come online. There are standards that need to be set. But a farmer would be forced at this point, if they had a contaminated farm field, they would potentially be held liable and have to pay for the cleanup and remediation of the farm field. But I want to be clear, Sabrina, that right now, when you go ask the federal government, well, how do you remediate a farm field? What exactly goes into that? What kind of techniques should be used in order to clean up a farm field? They don't have the answers to that yet. They don't have the answers to things like how do you destroy and dispose of PFAS chemicals? So there's still a lot of open questions. And that's why the American Farm Bureau Federation was very vocal in saying that the CERCLA rule is not where we should start. You can't go around assigning liability to people when you haven't even figured out a way of properly cleaning this up. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that remain out there, and they're really important pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, I would think so. When we're looking at such a big issue and there's not a known way, or they haven't figured out a way to actually clean it up yet, but yet they want to start holding people liable. What could be the best outcome from this point? And what are you hoping can happen at this point?
So at this point, AFBF is very vocal on the fact that we need a liability shield for farmers and ranchers in this country. Certainly, there are entities out there that should be held responsible because, PFAS, we do need to clean up a number of areas of the country from PFAS contamination. But the CERCLA rule has always, the theme of the CERCLA rule has always been that the polluter pays. Well, if it's the polluter pay, then it should be the chemical companies that should be on the hook for cleanup and remediation and paying into the Superfund, and they should assume that liability. So we are lobbying Congress to create that liability shield that will protect passive receivers, protect farmers and ranchers from any liability.
I know that you don't really deal in hypotheticals, but I'd like to throw one at you. If we were to look at this in a different way, compared to like an oil spill, let's say there's an oil spill from a company offshore and cleanup has to happen. Maybe some oil comes up onto the beach and you own a home on the beach and there's, oil there. It's not the homeowner who would be expected to go out and clean. It would be the oil company who had the spill that is expected to carry the burden of cleaning it up. Is that right?
So that is correct. And just to bring it to a more timely disaster, the situation with Norfolk Southern in Ohio, that is a perfect example of how the Superfund law is supposed to work. But the issue that we have with PFAS is that it is ubiquitous. It is absolutely everywhere. If you go looking for it, you will find it, obviously at differing levels. But they have found PFAS chemicals in Antarctica. So I know a lot of people like to try to compare this to dioxins or lead or other chemical issues, but this is on an entirely different level because so many of these PFAS chemicals have been used so prevalently and, really for many decades. The situation that you described is exactly how the Superfund law was designed to work. But unfortunately, we don't have a law on the books that addresses an issue that is as complex as the PFAS situation. I think this administration has decided to take the statute that most closely fits this situation off the bookshelf and apply it here, but it does not fit. And Congress really needs to take a better look at perhaps designing a new law and a new statute to address a situation that is this complicated.
You mentioned, talking to your legislators, elected officials. Is there anything that our listeners can do to get involved in this?
Yes. And I think talking to your elected officials at all levels of government is very important, because I'm just talking about the federal piece, the federal government piece, but there are state governments that are certainly, bringing down laws and regulations that folks need to be aware of. But I think over the last couple of years, we have done a very significant push on educating elected officials and members of Congress about what the impact is going to be on agriculture. I have been up on Capitol Hill and I have highlighted this as a concern, and I've had, prominent members of the United States Senate look at me very confused and say, "Well, where in your operation do you use PFAS chemicals?" So I think having those conversations, expressing the need for that liability carve out for passive receivers, understanding that farmers and ranchers are at this point could be held liable for these things, that is an education effort that needs to be taken on. And we would appreciate your listeners helping that.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would like for our listeners to know, or anything that we missed that we should have touched on?
It's worth noting that the agencies did release enforcement discretion policy in conjunction with this rulemaking. It is EPA's best effort to say that they're not going to come after farmers for enforcement actions. So, essentially they said we're going to do our best not to take enforcement actions against farmers and ranchers. That is great, but the problem is that still doesn't protect us from third-party litigation. So this is not an ironclad liability shield that the EPA has offered us. But I did want to mention that there is this enforcement discretion policy that they have released, but it does not give us the protection that we need. It does not allow us to sleep well at night. It just doesn't provide that complete coverage of liability that we need.
Thank you once again to Courtney Briggs, the Senior Director of Government Affairs at the American Farm Bureau Federation, for this important conversation. And if you would like to hear more conversations like this one, be sure to hit that subscribe button. This has been the AgNet Weekly. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Continue the conversation online by following Sabrina Halverson on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. And get more agricultural news at southeastagnet.com and agnetwest.com. This has been the AgNet Weekly from AgNet Media. Thank you for tuning in.